Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, joined by Nomi Rojas. Top of the afternoon.
Hi, Dennis. I'm Nomi Rojas, editor of Synapse, the region's life sciences news digest. And today we're talking to Eric Evans. He is the market CEO for Sierra Medical Center and Providence Memorial Hospital. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here again with you, Nomi.
There's so much to talk about, so much happening. I mean, if you aren't listening to the news or reading the papers, you must be living under a rock, because Sierra Providence Health Network is building, creating new programs, expanding. Where do we start in this conversation? But I was just looking a little bit at the articles that I've published in Synapse, and just in the last 5 or 6 months, you guys have made so many announcements, starting with your $120 million tenant investment into El Paso Hospitals. We talked about that at the first interview we had with you in January. So this is actually the second interview we've done with you. During that interview, you mentioned a new geriatric unit.
Yes.
And a hybrid OR. And you mentioned that it was going to be happening, and it's happened now.
That's right.
You talk about the geriatric unit?
Sure. No, it's funny hearing you talk about all this stuff and how it seems to have come very fast. I know since the day I arrived in El Paso and really started looking at market needs and what we saw as opportunities, it actually feels like it's been a long time for me. It's nice to see it coming to fruition. So last time we discussed quite detail about the $120 million we're reinvesting downtown, specifically in Providence Children's and Sierra Medical Center. And a big part of that was some of the early projects were two things. One is the geriatric behavioral unit, which is a unit we had a ribbon cutting for, I guess it's been a couple of weeks ago now, and actually will be officially licensed as a separate secured unit starting June 1st. We had our first 5 patients already here in May. It's actually a very specialized unit that we're excited to bring to El Paso. So it's the only acute care-based geriatric unit in the city.
When you say acute care-based, you mean hospital?
Yeah, meaning at a hospital, correct. Meaning at an acute hospital. And so it's really designed for a group of patients that in the past, I would say, we haven't provided optimal care for. So it's a very common unit in many cities. But the idea is we have patients who need both acute medical care and also have psychiatric support needs, especially the geriatric population. So specifically for this, it is targeted at the geriatric population. And I know many of us face this as we grow older. I know my grandmother suffers from dementia, and it is quite scary when you think about folks that have those dual needs. Just being in a medical bed, and we do lots of great things in medical beds, and we're trained to do lots of things there, but we're not built there as a psychiatric support network. And so what we had discovered over time is there was a pretty dramatic need for folks who had both acute care needs and also really needed psychiatric support. So this unit offers 24/7, 365 multidisciplinary team support for those folks over 65 who may suffer from depression, may suffer from Alzheimer's, dementia of all sorts, aggressive behavior, and those kind of things, unfortunately, are common in that population. And we think the support network really is going to be invaluable to our community. And one of the things I'm really excited about is from day one, it's really working closely with coordinating that care for when they leave. So it's not just about while they're there. It's about how do we make sure these folks have a support network that allows them to maintain any success they might gain while they're in the unit when they leave. And so throughout the launch, we've worked closely with Emergence. We've worked with, obviously, Texas Tech has been a great partner on this. Dr. Briones is our medical director. So there's medical supervision by a psychiatrist. But yet when the patients need acute care support, they're in an acute care hospital and they have resources to deal with those things as well. So we think it's a tremendous resource for the community.
And that unit includes a site for Texas Tech's Department of Psychiatry residency program. What is that? I mean, I imagine it's some kind of a lounge, or what is
that? Well, it's actually just the whole location actually provides another teaching environment. So really what it is a chance for residents to rotate through and be exposed to another opportunity area to learn as they go through their training. And so when we talk about being another site, it's another location that provides a unique opportunity for us to train future psychiatric leaders. So I see that, when you look across the country, not just El Paso, and Paso del Norte Healthcare Foundation has been great in pulling together all the community leaders of health systems. And we've spent quite a bit of time. We've all pitched in resources to have an outside group come in and look at our overall behavioral health system here in the city. And across the country, and especially in this city, we do have a shortage of those professionals. And so adding another site and being able to have more people train in this type of unit, we think is tremendously valuable.
Yeah. We do have the aging baby boomers. So it is a great service to be focused on.
How did you guys recognize that this population really needed more acute care than ever before?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. Actually, I don't think it was hard to recognize. And in some ways, I regret that we probably didn't get to it sooner. I mean, if we spend time, even if you didn't just look at the data can pretty clearly show you that. But just talking to the nursing staff about saying, hey, let's talk about where do we struggle with meeting the full potential needs of patients? And this was a group that pretty quickly, as you talked to them, said, this is a real challenge because we're helping them, their acute condition, but we're not helping the whole person. And, you know, in a hospital, we have professionals that are so focused on wanting to make sure that we heal, and when the person leaves, they're going to be fully capable of moving on and not having to come back. And those psychiatric needs often can override even any gains you might make on the acute side. And so you see those folks kind of end up bouncing back into the hospital. And ultimately, if you don't address all of those things together, it's really hard to actually heal people. And so it was obvious in talking to our staff. When you look at the demographics and the numbers across the country, it certainly has been shown to be a need. I mean, I think it's one of those things that hospitals, historically, they haven't been real prone to go into. But for us, coming from a different market, understanding what I saw was the need, it was one of those things that I thought was an easy thing for us to go make the investment in.
Low-hanging fruit.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the hybrid OR.
Yeah.
Dennis, have you seen the picture of this hybrid OR? The first time I saw a picture of that OR, it was like looking into the future. It looks futuristic.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible room. And these are becoming more common, especially in big metropolitan areas. The idea here really is combining technology that we've had kind of in the hospital, but putting them in the same place. So it's taking the very latest in cath lab technology, which the cath labs have come so far in the last 10 years, and then putting it into a state-of-the-art OR environment. So the idea, the concept behind this is that there are a number of patients that have a very, very high criticality needs that are better served being in an environment where you can quickly go from both surgical and cath into endovascular procedures. And so what's so exciting about this is some of the really cutting-edge things that are out there that we're pushing forward with are developing, for instance, something called a TAVR program, which really, for folks who might have a heart valve issue. In the past, one of the big problems with heart valve issues is sometimes people really weren't healthy enough to be able to go through a true open-heart surgery. And so, you know, those can be quite traumatic. This room, and as we start getting our cardiologists and cardiothoracic surgeons to work together, you can imagine these are procedures where, you know, those two groups aren't necessarily in the same room all the time. But this allows them to work together, and eventually we'll be able to have a program where we actually are able to replace heart valves in a minimally invasive way, which is incredible. I mean, if you go back even 5 or 10 years ago, it would have been unthought of or would just not have been in the cards. And so we see this room as kind of where a lot of cutting-edge stuff is happening, and it allows us to bring together two very different specialties in a way that actually leads to better outcomes for the patient and different and new procedures.
And so traditionally, as I understand, patients would undergo procedures and diagnostic tests in a cath lab, and then by a separate surgical team would undergo the surgery in a separate operating room.
Yes, yeah, so it's not always quite that simple because sometimes patients would not need both, right? So sometimes there's lots of patients who do all they need is a cath procedure, or they might need an open heart procedure. But there's a group of patients, and also just there's certain highly acute patients, so AAA repairs and things that require just great visibility and also potentially backup that this environment provides just a much better place to do those in. And so, you know, I think if you and hopefully you'll get the chance to actually bring in some of the cardiologists and the cardiothoracic surgeons, because I think it'd be great to hear so they can explain this to you in much more detail and technical jargon than I can. But what it really does do is it provides better visibility in many cases. It provides a very quick backup and change if you need to do that with really acute sick patients, all in the same environment. And so while many patients would never be in one place needed to have both of those at once, the ones that do and the ones that have that backup, we think it's tremendously important to have that technology here in our community.
And so the hybrid operating room is solely focused on cardiac patients.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a cardiology-focused room. And within our hybrid, and I'm sure you're going to get to this, we actually are only the 7th hospital in the country that put in a robotic system called the Magellan, which we're really, really excited about, actually. There's a lot of really cool things that allows us to do. One is it allows for a lot more precision in some of the work the cardiologists do. I think one of the hidden benefits of it is actually for cardiologists, they also don't have to be in the field. So you can imagine cardiologists are exposed to a tremendous amount of radiation. They have to stand for long periods of time. So you think about a group of specialists that, quite honestly, there's a need for across the country. We see this as a way to extend careers, to make it a healthier opportunity for them as well. And then, of course, for the patient, the robotics allows for just such precision. And what we're really interested in seeing is this technology has proven to actually reduce supply costs. So, more precise, less supply usage. We're really searching for ways to actually drive better outcomes while at the same time driving better value, because we all know healthcare is expensive, and we got to find ways to make it affordable.
I read that it's a $5 million cardiac hybrid operating room, and it's located in Sierra Medical Center.
That's right.
The El Paso Times said that the hybrid OR is the most expensive room in the four-hospital Sierra Providence Health Network. Is that right?
That's right. It's definitely, because you can imagine two of the most expensive places in any hospital is your OR and your cath lab. And so bringing them together certainly does make it expensive. However, we also think that the benefits with the technology actually through, again, allowing more precision, through hopefully reducing supplies, through allowing procedures that in the past would have been much more invasive and might have required a patient to stay in-house for, 5 to 7 days. Now we hope to see that be a lower length of stay, less complications. And so, there's always trade-offs. Our goal is when we invest in technology to make sure that not only does it improve outcomes, but stepping back too, that it's also sustainable from a cost perspective.
Okay. The geriatric unit is located inside Providence Memorial Hospital.
It's inside Providence. And we should kind of say, one of the things that I'm excited about going back to the reinvestment in the hospitals is we are taking a little different approach than we have in the past. So Sierra and Providence for a long time pretty much did everything at both facilities. And not that we won't do most everything at both facilities, but we're really going to focus more centers of excellence in certain facilities. So when you think about going forward, geriatrics is going to primarily be at Providence. We already had what's called an ACE unit or advanced care for the elderly unit. That's right across from the geriatric behavioral unit. And so we have a floor really at Providence that is a geriatric, really dedicated floor. There's some things we can do with just having single populations that make it much more focused and easy for that group of folks. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine, so at Providence, it's really going to be oncology, geriatrics. We're going to be focused on women's and children's, of course. Providence is known for that. And urology. And I think I said oncology. Oncology is going to be at Providence. When you go to Sierra, very much cardiac, orthopedics, neurosciences, and rehab. And so we're really going to try, instead of trying to be all things to all people everywhere, really focus our investments and energy to make sure we create centers of excellence that really differentiate the outcomes and the care our patients receive.
Okay. If you are just joining us, our guest today is Eric Evans, Market CEO at Sierra Medical Center and Providence Memorial Hospital. I wanted to talk to you about the emergency room that Sierra Providence East is opening in Horizon City.
Yeah, and that's that plays in. I'll mention too. In January of this year, we actually converted our urgent care center in the Northeast to an emergency department as well. So to add access up there in that community to close to home, 24/7, 365 emergency care. And I would mention these standalone emergency departments truly are emergency departments. They're staffed 24/7 with physicians. They have blood banks. They have labs. They have CT. They have all the things you would expect to have. So they're very different than an urgent care center. Although we will be reopening another urgent care center in the Northeast too, because I think it's important people have access to both, because you don't, if you don't need an ED, you need to go to the most cost appropriate place for you. Going back to your question on Horizon. So, Sally Deitch, who's the CEO at East, and I certainly from a city needs perspective, we're always looking at where in the city do we see that there's a gap and really the distance is just too far or the population is large enough that they really need more healthcare support. And there's no doubt that Horizon is one of those areas. That catchment area now, I want to say it's about 100,000 people when you look at that service area, 77,000 in Horizon. And so there really is a lack of healthcare access out there. And so it is a pretty large development. I think it's about close to 10 acres that we're going to purchase out there. We're going to build a facility that will initially be, I think, a 10-bed emergency department, but eventually has space to even, add observation beds, add additional capacity over time. And based on the needs and population of that community, how fast it's growing, having access again to 24/7, 365 care, we think is a big deal. It'll also have a helipad, so it's going to be a nice access point for that community, and really, really excited to see that happen. I believe it's going to open in the first quarter of next year if all goes per plan.
It strikes me too that having the helipad there in Horizon City also accelerates the need for the outlying communities to be able to have access to critical health care. immediately with that potential.
No doubt about it. I mean, we think, and actually one thing that we've seen with these type of centers is that once people have access to it, and what you're absolutely right, I mean, there's so much of that stuff. So much of the care we provide in those settings is so time sensitive. You know, you think about the window for stroke patients, you think about heart attack patients. And so our belief is, gosh, if you're going to go in there and make the investment and truly make it an ED, a helipad's part of what you would normally find there. And mm-hmm. it's an investment we think is the right thing to do in those situations.
And one of the things also is that you're right on I-10.
Yep.
And so oftentimes you're going to find accident victims between Van Horn and El Paso. So that makes it an incredible critical care facility for DPS to be able to fly in critically injured patients.
Yeah, and certainly it won't be a trauma center by any means, but the ability to have patients that come there get stabilized and transferred quickly is really the kind of the key opportunity.
Is that emergency room in Horizon City, is that part of the $120 million investment?
No, that's a totally separate investment, so that was not included. That's a separate project.
Okay, yeah. And the expanding that they're doing at Sierra Providence East Medical Center, yeah. That's separate from the $120 million?
That's separate too. That was somewhere in the neighborhood of a $70 million investment. That, you know, that hospital, as you guys know, we built it in 2008. In some ways, I like to use that comparison. I know we're going to talk about our Westside Hospital here a little bit. But you look at that community when we bought that land originally in 2002 and 2003. And, you know, you take a picture out there and it was really just a big field, right? I mean, there was nothing out there. And so, what's been amazing there, we built the hospital in 2008. It was, you know, out of capacity well before we would have imagined. And so it's already, you know, it's going from, I think it's 110 to 180, almost 190 beds. It's got the busiest emergency department in our whole system. And so the growth out on that side of the community really, it deserves to have a high level facility out there. And that hospital has just done phenomenally well under Sally's leadership.
It's a very nice looking hospital too.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And again, if you missed the beginning of the show, all of this has happened really in the last 6 months since January. All these developments, all this new building, and most recently, the announcement of a Westside Hospital being developed by, what is the intersection? Trans Mountain and Wrestler.
Trans Mountain and Wrestler, yeah.
I have a lot of questions about that. I know the El Paso Inc. did a great story, and it was titled, How the Northwest Hospital Deal Was Done. And it talked about how you went to the tenant board in Dallas. Right. And you made the pitch.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was tremendously exciting, as you can imagine. We're blessed to have a very strong board of directors and a very supportive group of El Paso. Certainly our company, Tenet, has grown tremendously over the past 9 months as well. We actually acquired a system called Vanguard Health Systems that added almost 30 hospitals to our system, and including a bunch in Texas. So the Baptist system in San Antonio joined us, Valley Baptist down in Harlingen and Brownsville. And so we've had a lot going on. But it was a lot of fun to go to the board. And actually, for me, it was exciting in that I knew we had a very good story to tell here. When I had been blessed to spend, at that point, I'd been here, about a year. And during that year, just really getting to know this market and seeing what I saw is just tremendous opportunities for us to meet needs and reinvest and have it be even a more vibrant healthcare community than it was. So yeah, we went in, we asked for a couple of big projects at that point in time. I was still asking for the renovation dollars downtown. And we were also talking about this new development on the west side that I think is just particularly exciting with the tie-in with Texas Tech and the collaboration we're going to do with them to bring additional teaching to the community. You look at the growth on the West El Paso and Santa Teresa and Southern New Mexico. I mean, it was one of those communities, again, going back to those questions we ask, which is, if I go out and talk to EMS and I say, hey, guys, where's your biggest pain points? I think going into this year, they would have said the Northeast, because when somebody comes from the Northeast, we have to go all the way into the city. Our ambulance is out of service for 45 minutes. It's a long way, and can, depending on traffic and everything else, can be problematic. That's one reason we really were compelled to make the investment in the Northeast ED. And then on the west side would be right there with it, where it was, you look at the industrial development out there, you look at all the things happening, and you say, gosh, that community continues to stretch farther and farther west. And ultimately, we felt, based on growth plans, projections, and everything else, it was time for an investment out there. And fortunately, Texas Tech was kind of in the same boat looking at that market, and it made sense for us to really team up for the community.
Is the new Westside Hospital part of the $120 million? So,
no.
Separate.
That investment you're referencing is just for the renovations of the two hospitals downtown. And so this is all in addition to that. And to me, it shows the opportunity that lies in this community, the opportunity, the growth. What I see is just the great potential this city has, not just about El Paso, too. I would reiterate that our investments are envisioned this to be the regional healthcare hub of the area. So, I mean, to me, Southern New Mexico, West Texas, those folks, when they need tertiary quaternary care, El Paso should be the natural place they would want to go. And not just there, state of Chihuahua, too. I will tell you, to me, it's disappointing how many people currently fly over El Paso from Chihuahua to get healthcare. I mean, we believe that's a really a place where that community feels very comfortable in El Paso. They're very tied in socially and culturally, and we believe we can actually provide an outstanding service for that group as well. So we see this as more than just El Paso-centric. I mean, certainly it is El Paso-centric, but regionally we believe that it's going to draw a lot more economic vibrancy and healthcare activity for our community.
MediStar is going to be the developer.
Uh-huh.
How were they selected?
So it's interesting. I've gotten to know MediStar, the company, quite well through this process, and they've been great to work with. They had been looking out in that area for quite some time, even before we were. And so, you know, they were kind of involved with the project from the beginning, but they've been proven to be a very good partner. They've done a lot of projects across the country.
They're based in Dallas, right?
They're actually based out of Houston, I believe. Okay. Pretty sure it's Houston.
And you're also building, along with that hospital, a medical office building. Do you know what services will be in there?
Yeah, so that goes back to what MediStar is actually doing. So we will develop and build the hospital. And there's a little confusion on this in some of the articles. MediStar will actually be developing and building the medical office building. It'll be 110,000 square feet. You know, it'll primarily be physician services, right? So a lot of primary care. I would expect you're going to see the core specialties, orthopedics, cardiology, oncology. And then I'm sure there will be outpatient services there as well, whether it be imaging, women's imaging. You know, I think there's lots of things to be determined there, but it's going to be an exciting access point for folks. And hopefully, again, you go back to the need for additional physician access. So you go talk about wait. People like to talk about wait times to get in to see a physician in the city of El Paso can be quite challenging. And the goal of this is how do we bring those down? How do we bring new professionals here? And so we think that it's going to be a tremendous boon, obviously, to the west side of El Paso and to southern New Mexico.
Access is always important.
Yeah.
And one of the things talked about is accessible public transport.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys work with the city and county to make sure this is done?
Yeah, so I think that it's exactly what you're saying. We have to work very collaboratively, right? I mean, I think everyone understands when you have an investment like a hospital, I mean, it's a huge investment. Obviously, it brings a lot of resources, but it also has to be somewhere people can get to. And so I think that what I can tell you is over the next couple of years, when you look at the roadway development out there, I don't see it's going to be an issue for us to really team up with public transport and everything else to make sure there's adequate access points. But you're right in that I think sometimes these projects happen and there's not the collaboration there should be between the city and the county and everyone else. And we're certainly committed to making that happen. And I think I've been impressed with actually how proactive the city has been in working on this with us, and I really don't anticipate that'll be an issue, but it's something we've got to keep in mind.
One of the things I noted, and this goes back to talking about the geriatric care over at Providence, is that you're on the pinpoint line to Brio for the west side. The Brio southbound stop is right in front of Providence. The Brio northbound stop is right across the street from the complex. And so it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, obviously, anytime we look at where we're going to locate a hospital, we spend a lot of time thinking about traffic patterns and how will people access a facility. And so one of the really big reasons we ended up where we were is you're right at the corner of Trans Mountain, which is going to open up the Northeast. And in many cases, that may be their quickest access point, right? So you think about, from that standpoint, it meets the needs of West El Paso and Santa Teresa extremely well. And quite honestly, it's not far from Las Cruces. And so we believe it's the right kind of central location between the facilities in Las Cruces and the facilities in downtown El Paso. And you're right, from an access point, it should make that pretty easy.
Is it going to have a helipad?
Absolutely.
Yay.
Absolutely. Yep.
This will be a teaching hospital. So you're doing this in conjunction with Texas Tech Medical School.
That's correct. Yeah.
I know that University Medical Center's CEO, Jim Valenti, had expressed a couple of concerns. He was worried that the new hospital is going to require recruiting of physicians.
Sure.
And I get worried that doctors might be recruited away from his hospital.
So I think a couple of things. I think I'd also mention that Jim obviously was very supportive as well as far as the need for additional capacity. I certainly understand his concern. The first thing I would say is that a county hospital has such a critical role to play in any healthcare community. And so certainly University Medical Center fills an absolutely essential need in this community. It also is and will remain the largest teaching hospital in the city and the key teaching teaching hospital. So this, while we're creating a teaching hospital, there's no doubt that they're the level one trauma center, they're the county hospital, and they play an absolutely critical role. So whatever we do has to be done in a sustainable way as a system. I would say that in this case, when you look at our community's needs, the idea of having more attractive opportunities in a very competitive world of bringing physicians in is better for all of us. You know, Sierra Providence, since 2010, we've recruited about 145 physicians into the community, which is a lot of docs. None of those were we competing with UMC on. I think we were, you know, it was a different group of docs. Those were docs that we were bringing in separately. So we don't see this as being anything competitive. And actually, the plan on the west side is completely additive. So there is not any plans to transfer any docs from Texas Tech's main campus right now. So all of these physicians would be viewed as being new to the community, not transferred out. And so Jim and I are going to definitely have to work collaboratively. And certainly we want to make sure that this doesn't do anything to harm UMC. But we don't see that. We actually see it as a different model, and B, certainly there are no intentions or plans of having this be anything but additive positions.
How many doctors will you need to recruit? I had seen the 35 number. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, I think in some ways, some of that's, it's hard to completely know, because some of this is about, you know, it's about timing and it's about, you know, how fast the community grows. I think, you know, realistically, when you think about a new hospital opening, the number's pretty big, even on the east side. I mean, it was a lot of docs over those first few years. I would think in the first 3 years, anywhere between 40 and 50 docs.
And will Texas Tech be helping in that recruiting effort?
Yeah, so I think from the Texas Tech faculty side, we'll be doing joint recruiting, right?
Okay.
So we will work together to find physicians that want to be in West El Paso, that have a commitment to the educational side of what the hospital is going to be. Importantly, you know, we will also be working very closely with our private physicians. You know, this hospital will be very dependent on private physicians as well. It will not only be a teaching hospital. And so certainly we think there's going to be recruitment needs, not only within our partnership with Texas Tech, but amongst the private physicians as well.
Second concern was the admittance of patients, and that patients who were not insured or underinsured might be siphoned off to University Medical Center, and the paying patients would go to the for-profit hospital.
Yeah, so I would address that in a couple ways. I mean, obviously, I understand why Jim would bring that up, but I do think, or Mr. Valente, I should say, I do think that when you think about this, you know, right now, Sierra Providence Health Network cares for a little over 40% of the combined uninsured Medicaid population in the city. So even though we are a taxpaying entity, we do a lot of care for folks who in reality don't pay our costs or pay nothing. In fact, the private hospitals in the city take care of almost 50%, about 46% of the uninsured patients. And so already, you know, we do that. We do it because it's the right thing to do. I mean, every patient that walks into our doors, I can tell you this, that our staff does not know what their payer is. I don't want them to know what their payer is. Our job is to care for people. How we make the finances work is a different story. So, I mean, from my perspective, people are going to choose where they want to go based on what they believe is best for them, between them and their physician, regardless of whether they have insurance or don't have insurance. And so we're very proud of the community support we give. Certainly, we understand Jim's concern, but ultimately, too, you know, I think that the balance that's been struck in many, many cities, and it's one that we feel will work itself out here as well.
Well, it's all very exciting. a lot of unknowns, but that's still exciting. I think that El Paso is growing, like you said, and we need to grow. It's growing is good and progress is good. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Evans.
It's my pleasure. And if I could, I would just add that I'm blessed to represent an outstanding group of physicians and caregivers at the Sierra Providence Health Network. And really what this investment says more than anything else is our company, our institution's belief in the group of folks we have to really drive great health care for our community. So thank you for the opportunity.
Anytime that you have something cooking, get a hold of Nomi. Let's do it.
Well, we don't want to be—we're not bored, so we'll definitely stay in touch on that.
Very cool. And you've been listening to another edition of El Paso Primetime. Thanks for listening. El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Past episodes of El Paso Primetime are available on our website, ktep.org. Happy Memorial Day! Thank a veteran. Thank first responders. Thank active duty. Thank you for serving our country. And thanks for listening. Join us again next Saturday at 1 for another edition of El Paso Primetime.